from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Pat Buchanan says the Republican Party has lost its soul, that the invasion of Iraq is the greatest strategic blunder in 40 years. 6 weeks before the nation picks the next president, Buchanan is attacking the new GOP from the right and claiming it's taking the nation down a dangerous road. Tonight on Point, Pat Buchanan on the evolution of American conservatism. He doesn't like it. But first, word from Iran today that it is moving ahead with a nuclear program that is raising ever greater alarm in Washington and beyond. U.S. policymakers are divided on how to respond. Stephen Weissman is chief diplomatic correspondent for the New York Times. He's covered the rising tension over Tehran. I asked him what message came out of Iran today and how it fits into the larger context of rising international concern.
The latest step that Iran has taken is to repeat its intention to continue enriching uranium, which the international community had asked it to suspend as a conciliatory gesture. So this has brought a new chorus of dismay from the Europeans as well as the United States, but it really doesn't materially affect the nature of the problem. The problem is, from the view of the capitals in Europe and Washington, a continuing one of Iran going ahead with what they believe to be a nuclear weapons program. But that's only one of the many problems that the West has with Iran right now.
You describe an almost eerie familiarity in the array of challenges facing the United States and Europe out of Iran, familiar as in parallel to what we saw in Iraq a couple of years ago. Could you outline those, Stephen?
Well, of course, the West and Western experts say that Iran is embarking on a nuclear weapons program, which is exactly what Iraq was accused of in the run-up to the war 2 years ago. But the evidence on Iran's nuclear program is much more extensive than it was for Iraq. And even before the Iraq war, a lot of experts felt that Iraq had not gotten that far. But some of these same experts feel that Iran is really heading toward a nuclear weapon. But there are other problems that the West has with Iran and that the United States has with Iran right now, which is a growing concern that Iran may be aiding the insurgency in Iraq, which is its next-door neighbor. And, of course, there's the concern generally of Iran's support of Hezbollah, which is one of the main funding vehicles for Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad and the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade in Israel, which has carried out the major attacks on Israeli citizens. So there's a full array of concerns, from support of terrorism to weapons of mass destruction. And all of this strikes a lot of people as similar to the growing concerns over Iraq in the years leading up to the war. And one final comparison is that some in the administration and conservatives of Congress are trying to get a debate going about support for regime change in Iran as one solution to the problem. And that, of course, began in the 1990s with regard to Iraq and eventually led to cementing of the consensus, at least on the conservative side, for the need to overthrow Saddam Hussein.
So how close is Iran believed to be to developing nuclear weapons, and what is on the table to be done about it?
The experts say it could be a couple of years away, but Israel, taking a much harder view, says that there's a kind of point of no return that Iran reaches next year, where it has assembled all of the mechanical ability to make a bomb, and that after the middle of next year will not need any additional outside help to finish the job. So there's a concern that something has to be done by the middle of next year, and Israel's very concerned that even though there's a consensus in the United States, which includes John Kerry, that what Iran is doing is unacceptable, they're concerned that the election and a new president or the same president being installed, time is going to slip away.
So what are the options for doing something?
There are no good ones. Iran is a huge, powerful, big country that is not going to be invaded by the United States or outsiders very easily. Unlike Iraq, there are no really palatable dissidents or exiles who could step up to the plate and take over Iran if there were some kind of a revolution.
In 1981, of course, Israel acted on its own when Iraq was putting together a nuclear reactor and launched its own airstrikes there. Is Israel threatening to do something comparable in Iran?
Israel is not threatening any such thing. In fact, Israeli officials that one talks to spend a lot of time explaining how that's not a plausible or practical solution to this situation because Iran's nuclear research and nuclear capability is far-flung in several different places, and some of those places are very, very well protected by being underground under very heavy concrete, ceilings. So the only thing I can, though, is that in the world today, and certainly in Western Europe and among many intelligence experts, there's a feeling that Israel does have the capacity and is not, for understandable reasons, being fully forthcoming about what it would do. You know, Israel has a policy that says that it will never be the first country to introduce nuclear weapons into the Middle East, but that it will never be the second country to do that. And everybody takes that to mean that it won't stand idly by to let somebody else introduce them first. And, of course, it's consistent with Israel's claim that it has no actual nuclear weapons.
What are you suggesting there, that there's some miracle weapon that Israel would actually threaten to or use a nuclear weapon to deter Iran's own development?
It's left deliberately ambiguous by Israel. I mean, military experts that I've talked to say that there is no silver bullet here or a clean solution. But Israel has made it clear that it won't tolerate nuclear Iran. And, in fact, John Kerry, the United States, even the Western powers say that a nuclear-armed Iran is not acceptable.
The Bush administration has been relatively low-key about this potential threat from Iran. What might we expect after the election, imagining a potential Bush victory?
I think after the election we will see a full-throated debate with the conservatives in the administration starting to talk about things like regime change and supporting democracy in Iran and also sanctions, economic sanctions, or a more confrontational approach than exists now. And the Europeans are saying that before we go to that phase, we have to exhaust all the other possibilities. And so I think this is on the way to becoming a big debate as soon as the election is over.
Steve Weissman, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Tom.
Stephen Weissman is chief diplomatic correspondent for the New York Times. He spoke with me from New York. Pat Buchanan is accustomed to having the ear of American presidents. He was a senior advisor to Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, and Ronald Reagan. Now, Buchanan wants the ear of the sitting president, George W. Bush. Bush's GOP has been hijacked by neoconservatives, says this Goldwater Republican, and has abandoned bedrock conservative beliefs for what Buchanan sees as a utopian flirtation with disaster. Tonight on Point Conservative, Pat Buchanan goes after the evolution of the American right. What do you think? Has the Bush administration abandoned real conservatism or fulfilled it? Who's the realist in the post-9/11 world? Pat Buchanan, George Bush, Dick Cheney, somebody else entirely? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Washington is Pat Buchanan. He served as advisor to Presidents Nixon, Ford, and Reagan. He ran twice for the Republican presidential nomination in 1992 and 96 and was the Reform Party candidate in 2000. He is co-editor of the American Conservative magazine. His new book is Where the Right Went Wrong, How Neoconservatives Subverted the Reagan Revolution and Hijacked the Bush Presidency. Good evening and welcome, Pat Buchanan.
Thank you, Tom.
Also with us tonight from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom. Hello, hello, Pat. Excuse me.
Pat
Jack.
Pat Buchanan, take us straight in here. What's the heart of your complaint, sir?
I think that the Bush administration has not been a conservative administration in at least four major areas. It has not vetoed a single spending bill, although we have a $400 billion deficit. It has refused to defend America's borders against an invasion from Mexico, which Time magazine said brought in something like 3 million illegal aliens last year alone. It has proposed amnesty for illegal aliens, which is not conservative. It's pursued a trade policy which has brought us a trade deficit in merchandise and a current account deficit nearing $700 billion a year, which is unsustainable and which will eventually destroy the American dollar. And sooner rather than later, in my judgment, when you see what is happening to the dollar against the euro. Mm. And finally, it has embraced a Wilsonian foreign policy of interventionism to democratize the Arab and Islamic world, using American military force to invade regimes that resist the American-Israeli agenda. In my judgment, this is Wilsonianism. Its manifestation, of course, is the invasion of Iraq, which I find was a distraction from the war on terror, not an addenda to it. And I think the neoconservatives, Wolfowitz in particular, has been called the intellectual architect of the Iraq war. I think post 9/11, these individuals who had been very much promoting and propagandizing for and planning and even plotting an invasion of Iraq, I think they successfully captured the vice president and the president and persuaded them of the wisdom of going into Iraq by promises of a cakewalk and a rose garden once we got there and democracy breaking out. And none of this has come to pass. And I think it has nothing to do with conservatism. It is democratic imperialism, and it has nothing to do with the conservatism with which I was raised or that which is associated with the founding fathers.
Pat Buchanan, there's a lot we wanted to get into there, but let me just ask you first. You talk in the book, Where the Right Went Wrong, about the GOP drifting into utopianism, the phrase you just used, democratic imperialism. George Bush just today made a big appeal at the United Nations. I guess you might have heard it as an appeal for the world to sign on to this agenda. What did you think of the president's speech today?
Well, I have no problem with the president expounding upon and expanding upon and advocating many of the ideas that have made America a great nation. My objection, and we should make the case for what we believe is the right way for mankind, and we should hold up basically a lamp to mankind. My objection is when you decide that that we're going to invade a country and we have to impose our idea of how they should govern themselves and how they should orient their foreign policy upon them. That is naked imperialism. It may be beneficent global hegemony, as the neoconservatives say, but it is imperialism pure and simple. And in the modern world, in the world post-Wilson world and in post-World War II world, peoples do not want to have other nations come in and tell them how to run their affairs, even great democracies or great republics like the United States.
But George Bush said again today before the UN, look, it's a different time. Weapons of mass destruction can come to our throat before we even know it. The only way we can succeed, he says, first of all, is go and remake the Middle East.
Well, that's preposterous. The Middle East comes out of basically four traditions, the tradition out of Jerusalem, Christianity, the tradition out of Greece, democracy, the tradition out of the Roman Empire and the British Empire. And all of these things created the modern West. The Islamic world comes out of a different religious faith and traditions and beliefs. And the notion that we can impose our model, which has evolved over 500 years in Europe and the United States over 250 years, that we can impose something like that on Iraq is, in my judgment, preposterous. And that we should do it with military force, it seems to me, is an act of folly. And we see the consequences of that in Iraq. And I believe that the president is, quite frankly, by now awakened to the folly into which he's been led by the neoconservatives. And I believe that Rumsfeld, for one, would like to see the United States exit from Iraq as quickly as possible. And I don't think they have any real ambitions now of putting together some Jeffersonian democracy in Iraq.
Pat Buchanan, hold it there. We've got to take a short break. We're talking with conservative columnist Pat Buchanan. His new book is Where the Right Went Wrong. You can join the conversation. Are the Bush administration stalwarts departing from conservatism or fulfilling it? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight with Pat Buchanan about the evolution of American conservatism. If you didn't get the hint already, it's pretty plain he doesn't like it. His new book is Where the Right Went Wrong, How Neoconservatives Subverted the Reagan Revolution and Hijacked the Bush Presidency. You can join the conversation tonight. Pat Buchanan feels betrayed by neoconservatism. What about you? Are you a conservative who feels betrayed, or are you with the Bush program? Pat Buchanan accuses the Bush camp of utopianism and calls that dangerous. How do you see it? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jack Beatty, join us here, Pat. Pat Buchanan has got a way with words. He says this is democratic imperialism. It will bleed, bankrupt, and isolate the republic. He says neoconservatives are not really conservatives at all. They are imposters and opportunists. What do you see in this, Jack Beatty?
Well, I want to cheer it, first of all. We've been saying these things on this program from the first day we were on the air, when we quoted a letter that a bunch of neoconservatives had sent to the president, in which they said that the war on terror would be a failure unless he invaded Iraq. And we said then that this would be one of the great strategic disasters of modern times, and I think that's turned out to be true for just the reasons Pat has given. And conducted with a kind of hubris, and an idea that somehow history is plastic to human will, that we associate with liberalism at its most caricature. That is, we can remake things, we can redo them, we can set things right. That itch, that impulse, has often been, I think, wrongly in some cases, rightly in others, ascribed to liberals. And here it is now with these neoconservatives in the Bush administration. But, you know, I do think that there is some part of conservatism that they represent, and that is, you know, throughout the Cold War, there was a branch of conservatism. Senator Goldwater himself occasionally sounded this way, that chafed under deterrence, that chafed under containment. And in the 50s, it was called rollback, you know, that we're just going to live with communism, mm-hmm. we're going to roll it back. And that alliance systems were kind of tethers, holding us back from doing what we needed to do to push the limit, really, with the Soviet Union and push back. There was a kind of pent-up pugnacity in conservatism. I think Mr. Rumsfeld has represented it through the years. And, Pat, I detect that here in the unilateralism here. Well, hell with the United Nations. In the, by God, if we want to do it, we're going to do it. And in the just the business of regime change. I mean, the idea that you can go around changing regimes, that seems to me, Pat, to be almost like the conservative unconscious from 20, 30 years ago.
Pat Buchanan, is this rollback too, successor to the Cold War rollback impulse?
Well, I think the ideal conservative for me in the Cold War was Ronald Reagan, who did have a policy of containment plus. It was to contain the Soviet Empire, but at the same time to outbuild them and outstrip them in modern weaponry and force them to invest enormous sums they didn't have to keep up. Secondly, to conduct what might be called an ideological or a freedom offensive against the Soviet Union on the basis of the superiority of our system and what we had to offer the world. In other words, to compete directly in the realm of ideals and ideas with the Soviet Empire. And third, a modified rollback strategy in the sense Reagan would not challenge the Soviet Empire at the center where its vital interests were in Central Europe, for example. However, on the peripheries of empire, the Soviet Empire,
Central America,
in Nicaragua, Central America, Nicaragua, El Salvador, Angola, Afghanistan, where the Soviet Empire was beleaguered and we were on the side of nationalism, Reagan helped with military assistance and humanitarian aid, a rollback of the empire until eventually, after the Afghans drove them out, that empire collapsed after its first great defeat in the Cold War. So that is an ideal conservatism to me. Now, where I parted company with the neoconservatives, and there was a series of articles in the National Interest where I argued for a new foreign policy post-Cold War, that we dismantle the Cold War alliances. I believed in them at the time. We did have to contain the Soviet Empire. But when it collapsed and fell apart, and the Soviet Union fell apart, and many of these countries in Eastern Europe and even in the old Soviet Union became free and independent, there was no need for us to defend Europe, and there's no need to maintain all these tripwires to get in war in places where Truman or Acheson or Dulles thought we should. What happened then was the neocons said, aha, our moment, our time, our hour has arrived. We're the sole superpower. We've got all this power, more than all the other major powers of the world put together. Now is the time to use it to impose our ideology. Irving Kristol is quoted in my book as saying in 1995 or 96, we need an enemy to unite us, to inspire us, to give us, in effect, to give us a cause. And they found that cause, I believe, in Islam in particular, in the idea of benevolent global hegemony. You see it in the national security strategy of 2002, where we're not going to let any other power rise even to the level of a regional power, and we will use force to prevent it. I mean, this is preposterous to say that no other nation's going to rise. There are nations, we can see them rising now, that are going to be great and powerful nations. India and China are two of them. So I think you have a utopianism here which has nothing to do with true conservatism. You read the words of Michael Ledeen that how we tear down everything and we are the great destroyers of traditions and customs and creative destruction is our middle name. This is neo-Jacobinism, and this is what we're dealing with in the neoconservatives, and it's not the temperament of Ronald Reagan in the least.
Pat Buchanan, what is your prescription then? You write, you say, terrorism is the price of empire. If we do not wish to pay it, we must give up the empire. First of all, there's the assertion of empire here, but George Bush seems to have looked at 9/11 and said, we've got to go out and deal with this root and branch at the source in the Middle East. What's your alternative?
The president is correct in this sense. In dealing with al-Qaeda, which has grown up and metastasized this cancer, and they're in 60 countries, we've got to run them down, apprehend them, capture, kill them. That is the war on terror. It's against al-Qaeda and its subsets, but it is not against nation states that are not aiding al-Qaeda. And in dealing with nation states like Iraq and Iran, containment and deterrence have never failed us. I mean, we saw Stalin get nuclear weapons and Mao Zedong get nuclear weapons and monsters themselves, but containment and deterrence worked.
They were states. They were nations. They were traveling terrorists.
They were nation states, and the nation state has something to lose, especially if it gets into a war with a superpower. So no nation state, in my judgment, has a vital interest in aiding acts of terror on American soil, because that ultimately could mean their own destruction. So I think we could have worked with many of these states that have unsavory regimes to run down al-Qaeda, and that's going to be a long war. But the fact of that we've invaded Iraq, I think, has created a great spawning ground and a recruiting field for Osama bin Laden. As I once wrote, the three people in the world who most wanted us to go and invade Baghdad and occupy it were Ariel Sharon, Osama bin Laden, and Richard Pearl. And they have the same interests. They both want the war of civilizations. I mean, you read Norman Podhoretz, and he's talking about invading 6 or 7 countries over there. And we're going to occupy them, or Krauthammer. We're going to go ashore with our troops here in the Middle East and in this whole part of the world, basically from Morocco all the way over to the borders of India.
But you know, President Bush has described this in terms that make the logic of that almost unassailable. If you buy, he says they, and I guess he means Islamist radicals, they hate our freedoms, our freedom of religion, our freedom of speech, our freedom to vote, assemble, disagree with each other. You know, if you're up against people who kind of hate you for what you are, what are you supposed to do?
Well, first off, I don't care if people hate us for what we are or what we believe. My concern is people who hate us enough to get in an airliner and hijack it and commit suicide flying into buildings. Now, the question is not simply why they hate us, but why are they over here killing us? And if we want to understand why it is they hate us and want to kill us, we should read their documents rather than not look in the mirror and say we are marvelous, democratic, free, rich, and good, as many neoconservatives do, and that's why they're attacking us. Bin Laden says in his own declaration of jihad against what he calls the Crusaders and the Jews, he says in that declaration, they are on the sacred soil of Saudi Arabia, the land of Mecca and Medina, with their temple prostitutes and their armies, and we are not defending our own holy places, and we should drive them out. And he takes this Islamic fundamentalist revolutionary movement to get us out of that area, and he tries to embed it in movements of Arab nationalism to end the sanctions on Iraq and to end what they perceive as the Israeli persecution of the Palestinian people. And so now we have played into his hands so that bin Laden is a hero to people in these nationalist movements.
And you say President Bush is flat out wrong. You write, we are not hated for who we are. We are hated for what we do.
Exactly. Before we went over there in force into the Middle East, the last time we had trouble with these folks was when we were assaulted by the Barbary pirates. And Jefferson sent Stephen Decatur to deal with that. He didn't go over and occupy that country and try to tutor them to become Democrats, small-d Democrats like the United States. He simply told them, stop looting our ships or we're going to sink all of yours.
Jack Beatty, I never imagined that you were an undercover Buchananite, but I'm hearing an awful lot of agreement here. Yeah, this isn't the age of the Barbary pirates we live in. Suitcase bombs, even nuclear weapons, all these threats are described, and it's not difficult to imagine them being in Manhattan or San Francisco Bay. Can you play this the Pat Buchanan way and still have sufficient security in an age of high-tech terror?
It seems to me that's just intelligence. People say Iraq represented a crisis of intelligence in every sense of the word. The British ambassador to Rome the other day at a party, didn't think people were listening, said that if Osama bin Laden could vote in this election, he'd vote for Bush because Bush is delivering precisely what he wants. I mean, it was necessary for the president to distinguish, to make the fundamental distinction. He was surrounded by people who just saw things in terms of states. They were going to go after a state. And sure enough, he was a state who had tried to kill his father. He was a state that his father had not succeeded in toppling. He was going to do that. And I think that was just not just a costly divergence from the war on terror, something far worse than that. Almost a kind of strategic furtherance of the aims of the terrorists.
We're talking with Pat Buchanan tonight. His new book is Where the Right Went Wrong. Let's turn to Mark calling in McHenry, Illinois. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Good evening. Good evening. And I'd like to say that I have yet to hear a word tonight from either Mr. Beatty or Buchanan that I disagree with. And frankly, I'm so thankful that Mr. Buchanan is making these points. I myself consider myself to be a conservative in many respects, and I cannot see anywhere with this administration where conservatism is really guiding it at all. I don't know what it is. I don't know quite what to call the philosophical base of the GOP right now. But I can tell you right now, I agree with everything that he said, so I'm not going to parrot it back. But I will tell you, I'm not going to stand by and see my son drafted to go into Iraq or to go into Syria or to go into Jordan or any other place over there to please the neoconservatives. He and I will be on the first express train to Toronto. I'm outraged by what I see going on and the mess that's been created by these people. And frankly, I don't see any way out of it right now. That's what I am most depressed about, is what do we do?
Mark, we've got it. There's a here from Illinois, Pat Buchanan, and a request for you to come up with a way out.
Well, that's the toughest question. First, I would tell Mark there's no way we're going to get out of this without paying a hellish price. We have made an historic blunder. We have roiled Iraq. I think we have radicalized it. The insurgency has arisen because of our presence, and it is now an organic thing which is growing in incidences of violence and in numbers. The numbers I understand from General Abizaid were 5,000 insurgents a year ago. Now it's 20,000. I've seen numbers as high as 100,000. And if it's growing and if the cause is America's presence, I think the United States has to leave. But when we do leave, we ought to realize that many who cast their lot with us are going to suffer the fate of the Vietnamese who did, and the Pied-Noirs who sided with France, and the Algerians who sided with France. And you have a real possibility that this could dissolve into a civil war, because the Sunnis seem to have nothing. The Shia have the majority there, the overwhelming majority, and they have the southern oil wells. And the Kurds now have the northern oil wells and autonomy. And so you could have a very, very difficult situation there, and it could end up as the kind of haven for terrorists that it was not under the dictator and thug Saddam Hussein. But I don't see how the United States can win this war, pacify this country, impose democracy there without an enormous investment of troops, which I don't see either President Bush or John Kerry, who's sitting atop an anti-war party, would be able to send.
But can the United States, with its dependence on Middle Eastern oil, with the world economic system's dependence on that oil, afford to pull out and say, the devil take the hindmost, civil war, turmoil, bring it on?
Well, look, of the countries in the world in the last 25 years, the three of the most hostile to us have been Libya, Iraq, and Iran. And all of them have been desperately trying to sell us oil. In some cases, it is the American 5th and 6th Fleet that are blocking oil sales from those countries. They can't do anything else with the oil but sell it. And if you take a look at all the exports of the 22 Arab countries and you subtract oil, they don't add up to Finland's. They have nothing else to sell. So I believe they would have to sell. But let me tell you something. You've met Steve Weisman was on.
Yeah.
If the United States goes in and makes airstrikes on these, and the United States is the only one that can take all of the facilities out. I think Iran's further away than he does from a nuclear weapon. But if we went in and started another fire in the middle of the world's gasoline station in Iran, and Iran starts sending troops into, or irregulars and volunteers into Iraq, I think the price of oil could go to $80 a barrel, and you could very easily have a depression in the West.
It doesn't look good either way, and yet President Bush is standing before the UN just today, Pat, saying, you know, sort of success is just around the corner. Iraq and Afghanistan will be models of democracy for the region.
I understand, and I think I cut the president some slack on this for this reason. Those American kids over there, they're some of the best we have in this country. They're fighting in what they believe is a just cause. I think they want to help these people. I think the volunteers we have doing humanitarian work are extraordinarily courageous. And the president is their commander. He cannot, you know, in effect, undercut their morale by getting up and saying, Lord, help us. We're in a far worse mess than I ever imagined. And I don't know exactly how we're going to get out of this. So I think he is doing his function as national leader and commander-in-chief of the troops, but I think deep in his heart, he knows the neocons have led him up the primrose path.
You think he may have turned? We've got to come back and learn more about that. Pat Buchanan is the author of Where the Right Went Wrong. You can join the conversation. Pat Buchanan says terrorists hate us not for what we are, but for what our country does. Does he have that right? And what about the rest of the Buchanan agenda, curtailing free trade, closing the doors to immigration, ending abortion? Are you in for the whole enchilada? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight with Pat Buchanan, three-time presidential candidate. And now out with a new book, Where the Right Went Wrong, How Neoconservatives Subverted the Reagan Revolution and Hijacked the Bush Presidency. You can join the conversation tonight. Has the Bush administration departed from conservatism, or is it fulfilling it? And what about the rest of the Buchanan culture war agenda? Are you in for the whole enchilada? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Barry's calling from Boston. Hi, Barry. You're on the air.
How are you?
Great.
I'd like to ask both Mr. Buchanan and Jack Beatty, after Afghanistan,
yeah,
whether we gotten bin Laden or not, or let's say we got bin Laden but didn't get Dr. Ayman al-Wazari, where would you go next? Where would you go next to fight the war on terror?
So roll back the tape and tell us how you would have done
it. Right. Specifically, don't tell me about a police action. In Afghanistan, the Afghanis called al-Qaeda the Arabs. So you have to go somewhere in the Arab world. Iran is not an Arab country. They're Persians. Where do you go? Are we waging a war against Islamofascism or some mixture of a kind of Islamofascism and a pan-Arab nationalism?
Okay, Barry, stick with us. Let me put that question. Pat Buchanan, let's roll the tape back.
Good.
It's what, January 2002? You're in charge. Where do you go?
After Afghanistan, what I would do is I would not have gone to Iraq. I would have called up each of the countries, I would do what the president did in Libya. And, you know, we say we don't negotiate with terrorists. Gaddafi's a terrorist. We negotiated with him successfully. We got rid of his weapons of mass destruction. And I would do as the president's father did when Saddam Hussein went into Kuwait. He made an ally of Hafez al-Assad, which is an extraordinary. Hafez al-Assad is a killer. And what I would do is I would go to each of these countries and say, listen, we have no objections to Arab nationalism. We have no objections to the kind of countries you want to have and you governing themselves. Our problems are in the Middle East. We simply want access to the oil, secure access, and we don't want you harboring these terrorists. And if we find you harboring terrorists, then you're not only going to be vulnerable to economic and diplomatic sanctions, but you will be vulnerable to strikes by the United States, and you saw what we just did in Afghanistan. However, we don't want to drive you out of the community of nations in any way. And if you work with us, then you can get out of the penalty box. If you give up supporting terrorism, we will take you off these lists. But we do want cooperation, collaboration, because we don't want any more of these people over there coming into our country and taking down our buildings and killing our citizens. And we have to tell you that if you're going to sanction them, you're going to pay a price.
But are you so sure they would have listened at that time? I mean, yes, Afghanistan came down, but that was the Taliban in poor Afghanistan. I mean, there was a lot of sense that the people could play both sides of the street here, and what would have been a big enough stick to persuade them otherwise?
The stick was what we did in Afghanistan. They all saw that, and the Iranians helped us in Afghanistan because they detested the Taliban, too. Mm-hmm. You had the passive support of the Libyans and even the Sudanese. The president made a very good statement. He said in one of those speeches he gave to Congress, from this day forward, and that, I wrote a column about it at the time. What he was saying is, look, whatever happened before, we're in a new world now. And if you want to have a new relationship with us, it means you got to get on our side in dealing with terrorism. I think, and I know he's a criminal and a thug, that if you had told Saddam Hussein that you are harboring Abu Nidal, who is a murderer and who's killed Americans, and if you don't want an attack on you or you don't want escalated attacks, we want you to send him out or send his head out in a box, I think he would have delivered it. I think you can work with these people, and you have to work with some of these people. It is a dreadful world in a lot of ways, but I think we could have done it. But what we did in Iraq was wrong because we have exacerbated the situation. We have 1,000 Americans dead now, 6,000 very seriously wounded, who would not be had we not marched up to Baghdad. And we have a situation there, I think, that is far more problematic for our future than any threat Saddam Hussein represented.
Jack, do you share Pat Buchanan's confidence that you could have grabbed Saddam Hussein by the ear and said, we want Abu Nidal's head in the box? More than that, that the United States could have confidently believed that there would be no behind-the-scenes cooperation that would put a more powerful weapon on American soil.
Well, you know, the Syrians were cooperating with us right up until the eve of the Iraq invasion. In fact, they saved a plane was going to crash into a building in one of the Trucial states, one of the Arab states in the Gulf, and they blew the cover on that, and that was aborted. They were cooperating. They were giving us information. They were involved in some of those European roll-ups of terrorists. They had heard Bush when he said, listen, get right with us, and it's from now on. But then when they invaded Iraq, and by the way, they weren't in Iraq for 3 weeks before Doug Feith was saying, well, we've got to look at Syria now. Oh, boy, that was the end of cooperation with them. So there's a perfect example of that. But, you know, Barry's question, post-Afghanistan, where did the terrorists come from? Saudi Arabia. I mean, wasn't that the time to have a fundamental conversation with these people to say, listen, if you want to have your madrasas, if you want to support, have your charities supporting these people, you do it at your peril. You know, if we have to, we will ration oil with little cups.
I can hear them laughing at that, Jack. I can hear them. This is the land of the SUV. I mean, Americans rationing oil in little cups. I mean,
trying to say is that a president who really wanted to get tough with this would get tough with Saudi Arabia, which to this moment supports 40,000 madrasas in Pakistan alone, at each and every one of which there's a mechanism, a mental training that can produce a terrorist. So we haven't had that conversation. Yeah. And when it was raised with the Bush, you know what he said? And this has not been corrected. He said, my gosh, Tim McVeigh was a Methodist. Do you think we could have it tell the Methodists to stop preaching what they preach just because he committed terrorism? Making an equation between Methodism and Islamofascism.
Jack, stand by. Barry's still with us. Barry, are you persuaded? These paths have done the trick?
I'm just glad to have learned in this conversation that Pat Buchanan and Jack Beatty stand proudly with Bill Clinton in the firm belief that airstrikes and the threat of them work wonders.
Yeah.
I just think that somewhere in here, the thing that we have not solved yet is, in dealing with this, is this the Islamic universe that has been twisted that we're dealing with, or is there some kind of pan-Arab nationalism that we still haven't come to terms with? What is the, you know, when you're negotiating with Yasser Arafat and you almost have a peace deal and he turns it down saying, you don't understand, I represent a billion Arabs. I thought he represented a few million Palestinians. Who are we dealing with?
I think Bill Clinton's, I regret that Arafat did that. That was stupid. Even if Arafat had said, this is not a final agreement, but we certainly can accept it as an interim agreement, I think he should have. And I was very hopeful when Prime Minister Rabin was in power and also when Barack was in power that something might come of it. And I credit Bill Clinton for the efforts he made at the end of his term. I do believe this. Look, the Palestinian cause is believed in by virtually every single Arab. And while the United States should support Israel's security and survival and provide them with the weapons they need to defend themselves at reasonable or almost no cost, we cannot continue to support the depredations of Mr. Sharon, his security fence snaking in and out of Palestinian territory, his takeover of all of Jerusalem, his attempt to annex half of the West Bank. This is not a peace solution. This is an imposed Israeli solution, which no Palestinian would accept. And if one did, he would be dead in 6 months. And the Americans have got to work on this problem because this is the great catalyst, the great cause of a lot of the hatred and animosity toward us is the perception that we are a double-standard, hypocritical nation which tolerates Israel doing things we would attack Iraq for doing.
But, of course, Mr. Rabin is dead.
He was assassinated by an Israeli extremist, and he is dead, but during the period of time from Oslo until his assassination, the West Bank and the Gaza Strip were relatively quiescent. There's no doubt that Hamas and some of those groups do not want a peace deal. They have the same interest as the Israeli settlers do. They both want all of Palestine, and they will fight to the death to get it. But the majority, I believe, at least it used to be, the majority of Palestinians and Israelis, I think, wanted the two-state solution, and I regret we didn't get it. And I think it is dreadful for the region, and it is certainly dreadful for the United States because every night on television you see pictures on Al Jazeera and Al Arabiya of what the Israelis are doing to the Palestinian, and it is a slow burn throughout that region.
Barry, thank you for your call. Martha's calling from Mansfield, Massachusetts. Hi, Martha. You're on the air.
Hi. Great show. I'm a longtime listener, and this is a great show.
Good to have you.
I just had a comment. I pulled over to the side of the road to call you because I was listening to the caller from Illinois who was very conservative, and I'm very liberal, and to be seeing eye to eye on some of these things is just kind of surprising. Maybe there's a hope for our nation after all.
Maybe.
But my question was, as far as that bin Laden would be happy that Bush is elected and this is sort of playing into that agenda, If Kerry were to be elected, which I'm hoping so because I don't think Bush deserves to be reelected, is there hope that, you know, we can appeal to some of the more moderate Arabs and try to salvage this? And I was wondering what Mr. Beatty and Mr. Buchanan had to say about that.
Let's go to that, Martha. Thanks very much for your call. Pat Buchanan, rubber meets the road. Kerry versus Bush.
I mean, could Kerry, can we reverse what's been done? I don't know. I think there's a lot of permanent or at least semi-permanent damage that's been done to America's relations and image in the entire Arab and Islamic world that I don't think is going to be repaired in the near future.
Would Kerry stand a better chance? Are you encouraging people to vote that way? Are you still sticking with the GOP guy because you're born and bred?
Well, it's not simply you're born and bred. I agree with the president on taxes and judges and sovereignty and values. And I disagree with him on Iraq, but John Kerry voted for Iraq, and I don't think John Kerry has offered any plausible plan that would reverse this situation. And my problem with him is he voted for something in which I don't think he believed.
So Martha wants to know, where do we go here? You're suggesting throughout this hour, Pat Buchanan, that George W. Bush has turned away from the folks who got him into Iraq. What's the evidence?
I think he has not sent more troops into Iraq. You get the sense Rumsfeld and the others are saying that the objective is to turn this over as rapidly as possible to the Iraqis themselves. I think the president's father is a tremendous influence with him, and even though they
he wasn't a couple of years ago. It didn't seem
he was not. He was not. But I also think George Bush is not totally unreflective. He has got to see that he was sold a bill of goods, and he is in a hellish mess right now, and it could very well cost him his presidency.
But he's on the stump almost every day, repeating the very kinds of things you're rejecting, that this is the central battlefield in the war with terrorism, that the Islamists hate us for who we are. All the things you're saying are bunk. He's making central to their stump speech.
He is, and for the reasons that I think I mentioned, he is locked into a certain position right now. But if you saw Robert Novak's column Monday, I ran into Novak mm-hmm. tonight, he said inside the administration that people, he suggested like Wolfowitz and others, are in favor of a rapid exit if the president is reelected. Anyone with an open mind and can look at this reality, even if they thought it was going to go well, and say, this has just turned out as we did not expect, and there's a real possibility that this could be a disaster. And I think people that see that, they start to look at the options, and I think the president will if he's elected. And I frankly believe that that John Kerry, I just don't think Kerry could convince his party to extend this war.
We've got 20 seconds. What about the neocon cheering section? They're still on. You hear them all over the place. Do they sit down and put a cork in it at some point or not?
I think they've broken their pick, as Mr. Nixon used to say, and I think they'll be gone. But I do think it would probably be better that they and Mr. Bush be held accountable for getting us out of that into which they took the United States of America.
Pat Buchanan, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you, fellas.
Pat Buchanan, author of Where the Right Went Wrong, How Neoconservatives Subverted the Reagan Revolution and Hijacked the Bush Presidency. Jack, we've got just 15 seconds. A word from you?
Well, up until the last couple of minutes, this whole program sounded like an ad for John Kerry until, we're going to vote for Bush, he says.
It's Pat Buchanan, folks. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thanks, Jack.